We started out with Humpty Dumpty. Last week, we had to wrestle with the reality of three blind mice. But this morning, we have little Jack Horner. Little Jack Horner sat in the corner eating his Christmas pie. He stuck in his thumb, pulled out a plum, and said, "What a good boy am I." So what can we learn from little Jack Horner? Well, for starters, we know that he is eating a Christmas pie. I don't know a lot about Christmas pie, but I'm going to assume it is a pie you eat at Christmas. So he's eating his Christmas pie, we're assuming on Christmas, but he's in the corner. Now, I don't know about you,
but when I grew up, the corner was the spot reserved for the kid that had been misbehaving. It is not the place you wanted to end up. I remember in junior high school, I had a Spanish teacher named Miss Chow. Yeah, go ahead and work that one through. And she actually referred to herself as the Dragon Lady. And that woman scared me into being a student. Her room was set up unlike any classroom I have ever seen. It was set up in a diagonal. So she taught from the corner, and all the chairs were facing the corner, and there were two desks on either side of her, and they were reserved for the students that had trouble staying focused. And she would be teaching, and if the students started to lose focus, she'd slap their desk, and they were back. But there was a third desk in her room, and it was in the far corner, and it was turned in the opposite direction, facing the corner. She called it Siberia. And she said, "If you do not want to learn, I do not want to teach you. I do not even want to look at you. Go to Siberia." You did not want to end up in Siberia. You did not want to be in the corner. That would mean that your studies have gone horribly wrong. But here's little Jack Horner at Christmas in the corner. Christmas was not working out for little Jack Horner. But this is one of the places that we find ourselves in this story. Because chances are, every person in this room has experienced life in such a way that not everything has worked out the way that you had hoped. The way that you had desired for life to play out hasn't played out the way that you had planned. You would hope to be married at this point. You'd wish that at this point in life you had a family. You wish that at this point in life you had a better relationship with your spouse, a better relationship with your children, with your grandchildren. Health hasn't played out the way that you had hoped. There's been sickness, there's been disease, there has been the loss of loved ones far too early. Your job isn't what you had hoped it would be. You had hoped that by this point in life, you would have a more rewarding career, a better paying job, any job at all. You had hoped that at this point in life, it would have been better. You had hoped that by this point in your life, it would have looked more like you had hoped or planned. But instead, you have found yourself in the corner. We've all experienced the corners of life, all of us. But look what little Jack Horner did. So little Jack Horner is in the corner on Christmas, but he's got his Christmas pie. And so what does he do? He sticks in his thumb, pulls out a plum, and goes, "What a good boy am I!" He gets a plum on the thumb and loses it. So did you see this? I've got a plum on my thumb. Not only does it rhyme, but it tastes good. This Christmas that seems so very compromised has been redeemed by fruit on my finger. And we look at him and go, "Dude, you're missing it. Do you realize what's happening in the other room? They're opening presents. They're laughing. They're singing. And you're sitting in the corner content with a compromised version of Christmas. Unfortunately, this is the second time we find ourselves in the story. In a life that has not always worked out as we had hoped, we find ourselves in the corner of life becoming increasingly content with a compromised version of life. We've allowed ourselves to be content with fruit on a finger. We're content with a life that we think is all about happiness and comfort. And it's easy to see why. It's easy to see why we've become convinced that life is all about happiness and comfort. You could look at our heritage. You could look at our contemporary culture. You know, as Americans, we all know that we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of. And our contemporary culture has conned us into believing that we all deserve a life of comfort. And so we sit in the corner of a life that has not turned out as we had hoped. And we start playing the if-only game. If only I had a better car. If only I had a lower mortgage payment. If only I could go on those nice vacations. If only my relationship with my spouse, my children, my grandchildren, my neighbors was better. If only I was healthier. If only I could do the things that I so enjoy doing. If only my job was more rewarding. If only my retirement package was better. If only. There's nothing wrong with any of those things unless we think those things are the answer to life. If we think those things are the answers to life, then we have become increasingly content with fruit on a finger. Somewhere along the line, we convinced ourselves that happiness and comfort were the same thing as joy. Now, obviously, happiness and joy are related. They're similar in some cases, and many times happiness and joy take place simultaneously. But happiness and joy are not the same thing. In fact, happiness is a poor substitute for joy. For the sake of our discussion this morning, happiness is fleeting, an emotional response to something working well. Ha! It's been a good day. Did you look at the weather? It's so beautiful outside. Not too hot, not too cold, a little bit of a breeze, and no allergies. What a good day. Woo! Oh, this meal is so good. I love me some cheesecake. I mean, yes. Oh, the movie was so good. I had a great time at work. We were able to accomplish all that we set out to accomplish today. It was a good day. It worked, and my team won the game. Woo! Joy, on the other hand, joy is true contentment. It's unshakable confidence. Joy is true contentment, unshakable confidence. We were created to experience and know joy. This is what we were created to experience and know. Contentment and unshakable confidence. Joy is not fruit on a finger. It is far more than that. You might remember the story of Nehemiah. Nehemiah went to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. The walls of Jerusalem at the time of Nehemiah had become destroyed. They were in ruins. And so Nehemiah goes and gathers together a rather diverse group of people to rebuild the walls of Jerusalem. Unfortunately, the neighbors did not want to see the walls of Jerusalem rebuilt. They liked Jerusalem in a weakened condition. And so they opposed the rebuilding of the wall. They were enemies of all that were rebuilding the wall. In fact, you might remember the picture of Nehemiah setting up the builders in such a way that two people work side by side. One would be building while the other held a sword. These were the conditions that Nehemiah was facing. And in that context, Nehemiah looks at the workers and he says this, "The joy of the Lord is your strength." The joy of the Lord is your strength. Our strength is not in how big or thick we can build a wall. Our strength is not determined by having an individual next to us who's holding a sword. Our strength has nothing to do with walls or weapons. It has everything to do with having an unshakable confidence in who God is and what God has done and what God is doing and what he will continue to do. That's where we find our strength. Or consider what the writer of Hebrews says in the 12th chapter of Hebrews when talking about Jesus. He says, "For the joy set before him," referring to Jesus, "for the joy set before him, he endured the cross, scorning its shame, and sat down at the right hand of the throne of God." On Thursday night in the Garden of Gethsemane, the night before Jesus is to be tortured and crucified and go through a hell that none of us will ever fully understand. On that Thursday night, was Jesus happy? I don't think so. In the Garden of Gethsemane, Jesus cries out to his Father, "If there's any way for this cup to pass from me, if there's any way that we can accomplish what needs to be accomplished without me having to go through what I know I'm going to have to go through, I'm for that." Remember, he's sweating blood. He is so overcome. Jesus in that moment is not happy, but he has tremendous joy. He has an unshakable confidence in his Father. And it's evidenced by the fact that that same night, he says, "Father, your will be done, not mine. I am completely trusting you. I am trusting you with all that I have and all that I am." Jesus has a joy in the midst of a horrible situation. I would not say he is happy. Happiness and joy are not synonymous. I am not happy when I hear that the diagnosis is cancer. Whether it's the diagnosis of a friend, a family, I am not happy when another loved one dies because of cancer. I'm not happy in that moment. I have a far different emotional response. I am greatly saddened. I grieve, I mourn, I weep, but I still have joy. I have an unshakable confidence that cancer does not get the final word in that person's story, because my God, the Lord Jesus Christ, overcame the grave. He, because of him, I can say, "Oh death, where is your sting? Oh grave, where is your victory?" You don't win. Cancer does not have the final word. Jesus does, and he has defeated death. And so even though I weep, I still have joy. I still have this unshakable confidence that cancer doesn't win. I am not happy when I read about human trafficking. Oh, I have a far different emotional response. When I hear of human trafficking, I am angry and I am disgusted. I'm disgusted that we live in a world where human trafficking and evil like that continues to exist. Oh, I am not happy, but I still have joy, because I know that my God is about rescuing and redeeming. I know that my God, who brought the slaves out of Egypt with Moses, is still in the business of rescuing those that are enslaved. And I can watch and see how the hand of God is at work with the International Justice Mission, with Agape International Missions, and other people that have responded to the call to be part of what God is doing to rescue those enslaved. And because I see God at work, and I know that God cares about the enslaved more than I do, I have joy. I have an unshakable confidence that he's not finished. I'm not always happy, but I can always have joy. You remember that song that we taught children? "I've got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart." Where? Down in my heart. Down in my heart. I got the joy, 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 joy down in my heart. Down in my heart to stay. In that simple little children's song, we are basically saying this confidence that I have in God, in his love, in his grace, in his patience, in his holiness, in his might, is what I cling to. I am holding on to the reality of who God is, and I'm holding it deep down in my heart, and I'm not going to let it go. But I wonder sometimes, are we to take this joy, this unshakable confidence in who God is and what God is doing and what God will continue to do? Are we to take all of that hope and just hide it away deep down in our being? Or perhaps we're supposed to let it be seen. Remember what Paul said in Philippians when he said, "Rejoice in the Lord always, and again I say, rejoice." To rejoice is to feel or show delight. To rejoice is to show delight. I'm not talking about being, you know, that fake face. Everything's great all the time. No, there's a time to mourn. There's a time to weep. There's a time to be angry at injustice. That's not what I'm talking about, just putting on this fake face. But I love the way that Charles Spurgeon, the great 19th century preacher, said it. When you speak of heaven, let your face light up. When you speak of hell, well, then your everyday face will do. I mean, tell me if this works for any of you. I am so overcome with gladness that I have been forgiven. I have eternal life. God invites me and his people to participate in restoring hope to a world in need. I'm so thankful for the love of Jesus. Does that work for anyone? I love what Brennan Manning said when he said, if you have experienced the love of the Lord Jesus Christ, alert your face. If we have an unshakable confidence in the person and work of Jesus Christ, it should show up. It should show up in our attitude. It should show up in how we participate in things. It should show up. If we've got this unshakable confidence, our lives should look different. But you might be wondering, where does one get unshakable confidence? You might consider yourself, I'm not that confident of a person. I'm a little more timid. I could use some of this confidence of what you speak. So where do you get this confidence? I came across a self-help article. And if you ever want to get me on my soapbox, one of the easiest ways is to start talking to me about self-help. But I came across a self-help article. I kid you not, it's entitled Superman Mode, How to Create Unshakable Confidence. Direct quote from this article. I call this getting into Superman mode. And here's what I'm getting at. When you talk to yourself as if you are that powerful, indomitable person, do you suppose that little by little, the person you are will start merging with that person and you'll start finding yourself growing stronger? Okay, I'll give it a shot. I can look at myself in the mirror and say, ooh, hey, you are one handsome, bald-headed, middle-aged man. Mm-hmm. Yes, yes, with a little bit of extra insulation in case it gets cold. Yes, sirree, that's you. Get on with your bad stuff. That doesn't work for me. In fact, talking yourself up is not the way to build confidence. In fact, it's almost just the opposite. If you want to have this reckless confidence, don't talk yourself up. Instead, acknowledge who you really are. I love the way that Suzanne Berner puts it. She says, if we think we can do something on our own, God lets us. But we will never know God's transforming power in our lives until we acknowledge our inability. I'm not strong enough. Or as George MacDonald puts it, and George MacDonald, if you're not familiar with him, he was a spiritual mentor of sorts for C.S. Lewis. And George MacDonald writes this. He says, confess ourselves poor creatures, for that is the beginning of being great men and great women. To persuade ourselves that we are something when we are nothing is terrible loss. To confess that we are nothing is to lay the foundation of being something. I love the way that David Roper, a pastor in Idaho, when he was a young pastor, he was meeting with one of his mentors, and he goes to his mentor and he says, "I'm inadequate." And I love how his mentor responded. "Indeed you are, my boy," he agreed with a twinkle in his eye, "and so am I. And it's good we know it. Some people labor all their lives never knowing they don't have what it takes." Do you remember that moment when Paul is pleading to Jesus to remove the thorn from his flesh? Multiple times, Paul goes to Jesus and says, "God, please remove this physical pain from my life. It is hindering my ability to be all that I think I'm supposed to be. Please remove this." He pleaded over and over again, and Jesus did not remove the thorn from the flesh. Instead, Jesus looks at the Apostle Paul and says, "My grace is sufficient for you. My grace, my undeserved favor is sufficient for you, is enough for you." This is what Jesus tells the Apostle Paul. As the Apostle Paul found himself in a corner of life, life was not turning out the way that he had hoped, and he cries out for help, and the response he gets from Jesus is, "My grace is sufficient for you." And so I ask you, is the grace of Jesus sufficient for you? Our response, because we're in church, is, "Oh, absolutely the grace of Jesus is sufficient for me. But if I could have, no. My grace is sufficient for you. Yes, but I'm going through this difficulty, and if I had that difficulty taken care of, then I would really, my grace is sufficient for you." There comes a time when we need to individually and collectively come to a place where we say, "Just give me Jesus and teach me to be content. Just give me Jesus and teach me to be content."
He is more than you could ever need. He's more than the eye could see. I don't deserve his love, but he's always been there for me. You see, Jesus met me when I was at my lowest. And if you don't know Jesus, know this. He is the greatest example of generosity this world of greed has ever seen. And when Jesus hit the scene, he changed the scenery and met diversity with serenity. If you're looking for peace, he offers plenty. Jesus was and Jesus will forever be king. And when the angels sing, they sing of the grace that was displayed for sinners like me. I can't explain him and I can't describe him. And if I could, he wouldn't be Jesus, because you can't explain eternity and you can't comprehend the galaxies. But it was the loving hands of Jesus who spun them into existence and created man, knowing he would go to the cross to pay our sentence. There was a certificate of judgment with a period after the sentence, and we were sentenced to death long before he said, "It is finished." He is a father to the orphan, a shelter for the homeless, a hiding place for the abused, and an anchor for our storms. He stormed the gates of hell and came out on top, and the power of his gospel cannot be stopped. Even when the world tries, and they try a lot. He traded places with Barabbas and became the catalyst of missions across the world, covering every portion of the atlas. If you're in need of rest, I know of a mattress. If you don't know Jesus, your future is tragic, but he gladly embraced tragedy so we could live in his presence of majesty. His presence is presence, and it's his presence that presents preciousness to a world of peasants. He is far from pretentious, but still loves those who are. He is the light of the world and hung the stars. He brings the dead to life and delivers life to the dead. He took a crown of thorns on his head so we could put crowns at his feet, and I can't wait until I get to kiss his feet that were nailed to a cross for me and for you and for every person around the world. He loves the world, and I love his word, because the word became flesh, and in his flesh he demonstrated the word to the world. He is an example to every boy and every girl. He is a lover of black people. He is a lover of white people. He is a lover of the unchurched and the assembly under the steeple. He doesn't see the believers' failures, but still takes time to celebrate their faithfulness. It's the power of the Spirit that enables us and gives us boldness when the world labels us. And if you want to label me, please call me a Jesus freak. And if that freaks you out, good. because it's better to be good with God than to fight being misunderstood by a world that could never understand. So let it be understood that I don't worship man, we worship Jesus. And although he doesn't need us, he still sees us and pleads with us to run to the cross where he bled for us. His heart bleeds for us, his heart grieves for us, but still graciously grants us a pardon for our treason in a season where the world tries to explain away the work of the Spirit with human reasoning. There is a reason they can't. Because the Spirit is like the wind, and the wind cannot be seen. But loved is the one who believes without seeing the unseen. I'm telling you today that Jesus is something. He's something more. He's something great. And if you want to know him, you don't have to wait. He stands at the narrow path with a key to the gate, and you only have to reach out and embrace his grace. I don't care who's president. I have a king who is always present. I don't care who holds musical celebrity. The voice of the Lord will always be the sweetest melody. I don't care who owns the riches of the globe. My Jesus holds more wealth than one ruby on his robe. I don't care who is the strongest or the fastest. Nothing matches the creator of the universe and his immortal, infinite status. I don't care about religious leaders who died and stayed dead. I'll only worship the one who conquered death and wears a crown on his head. His name is Jesus, and I'm telling you, he's something. He was faithful yesterday, and he is faithful today. I can feel his presence whenever I pray, and when the time comes for me to fade away, I'll remember the day I heard him say, my name is Jesus.
You can have your version of fruit on a finger. I just want Jesus. The Declaration of Independence was an amazing document. And in that document, we get this, we have the right to life, liberty, and the pursuit of happiness. And it's a beautiful ideal. But I don't know if it's the ideal I want to base my life upon. If anything, I almost want the opposite. Life? No, I need to be willing to give up my life for the sake of the gospel. I'm willing to die for the sake of the gospel. As Jim Elliot once said, he is no fool who gives what he cannot keep to gain what he cannot lose. Life, I need to be willing to die. Liberty, no. I want doulos. Doulos is that wonderful Greek word that we usually translate as servant or sometimes translate it as slave. It's not about liberty. It's about me submitting to the lordship and mastership of God in Jesus Christ. Okay, I am your servant. I am your slave. I am the doulos. You can choose liberty. I'll be a slave instead. And the pursuit of happiness? For starters, I defy you to find in the scriptures where you're promised happiness. You can go after happiness. I want joy. I want joy. I want the joy. Give me that unshakable confidence that Jesus has made a way for me to know hope, experience love, have purpose and peace, forgiven from a past I cannot change, and delivered me into a future that will be forever changed. You can have fruit on a finger. I'd rather have the joy that comes from being in relationship with a God that calls out to me when I'm in the corners of life and says, do not fear, for I am with you. And do not be dismayed, for I am your God. And I will comfort you and help you. And I will hold you with my mighty right hand. If you want fruit on a finger, that's your choice. I want joy. Would you pray with me, please? As we go to a time of prayer, as you examine your own life, maybe there's some truth in the statement that we have become content with fruit on a finger when we are created for so much more. Maybe this is the morning that you say, God, I confess my addiction to a compromised life, and today I surrender myself to you. You are the one that forgives and makes me clean. You are the one that gives me hope and future. So I give you my life, and I surrender to be a servant of yours so that I might know the hope and the peace and the purpose, that I might know the unshakable confidence that comes with the joy only you can provide. Lord, you hear our prayers. You hear the groanings of our hearts. You hear what we do not have language to say. And you love us. You forgive us. There's nothing we've done that's too great to overcome your love. So, Father, this morning, wherever we are, we just lift our lives to you. Father, as we continue to pray, we do so with music. So, Father, as we sing, may this become our prayer. And so, friends, I am not going to say amen because the prayer is not done. The prayer will continue through these next couple few songs. So would you stand with me as we continue to acknowledge the God that gives us joy?